Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Joe Salvo, and I have the privilege for about another 3 months of serving as the president of the Copyright Society. Thank you all for coming this afternoon. It's wonderful to see everybody. Without further ado, let me bring up Craig Mendy, who is co-chair of the New York Planning Committee here, who, with Matthew and the rest of the group, has put together this afternoon's program. So, Craig.
Thank you very much, Joe, and hopefully everybody can hear. The nice thing about this room is that you learn right away who cares most about being close to the program and who wants to be closest to the bar, as you always did. The program today, first off, I want to thank the people who really organized it, Ari Abramowitz. This is largely his brainchild and result of his efforts. John Puro, Nancy Wolf, who isn't here today but also is very helpful, and obviously Matthew Moore. We're going to have the panel take their places right about now. The moderator I'll introduce to you is, Robert Kasanek. He's the Associate Register of Copyrights and Director of Registration Policy and Practices at the Copyright Office. He served most recently as Deputy Counsel of the Copyright Office, where he oversaw the implementation of policy, regulations, and practices on copyright registration and deposit issues, and worked regularly with the Department of Justice on related litigation. Before that, he enjoyed a private practice that included major copyright litigation. He's taught copyright law for many years and currently serves as adjunct professor at Georgetown University Law Center and American University's Washington College of Law. And I'll let Robert introduce everyone else, and I will pass it on to Robert. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Good afternoon. I wanted to start by sort of setting up the next great Copyright Act and give a little overview. In the Manji's lecture, followed by testimony before Congress, the Register of Copyrights, Maria Palanti, proposed that rather than legislating on the margins of the 1976 Act, it may be time for Congress to consider a comprehensive revision of the copyright law, the next great Copyright Act. Mr. Goodlatte, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, a member of the Subcommittee of Courts and Intellectual Property, applauded this proposal, and last year at World Intellectual Property Day event, announced that Congress would begin a series of hearings on copyright law. In preparation for the Register's lecture, senior staff in the office were asked where changes or congressional review was warranted. We came up with quite a long list. We also looked at enacted copyright legislation over the past decade and found that the few changes to the law that were made were not addressing many of the critical issues that were important to creators, the public, the courts, and to the office. While the Register saw the benefit of comprehensive review and revision, she also recognized the enormity of the that task. The 1976 Act took over 25 years in the making and was a time when there were fewer entities at the table and when copyright law was much less polarized. While many areas deserve review, she acknowledged that Congress may want to start with areas in which a great deal of work has already been accomplished. For instance, there's Section 108 revision, the Orphan Works Report and subsequent testimony on that, the report on small claims, testimony on felony streaming, scope of the distribution right and making available, performance rights for sound recordings, incidental copies and their relationship to the reproduction right, the role of the first sale doctrine in the digital environment, and the availability of statutory damages and their relationship to actual damages or profits, review of the DMCA, both sections 1201 and section 512, section 115 reform, and the role of deposit in the digital age. She also expressed thoughts about the potential for some bolder thinking with respect to copyright law and raised some questions about copyright term, also issues of the direction of opt-out systems from copyright law and the change that that brings to the history of copyright law, as well as the having public accessibility to the copyright law and the current complexity of the law that has become so difficult for the public to comprehend, not to mention copyright lawyers. Today we'll hear some thoughts on the theory and reality of copyright revision. Joining me today in this discussion are, to my right, Alan Adler, General Counsel and Vice President for Government Affairs at the Association of American Publishers, National Trade Association for the U.S. book publishing industry. To his right, we have Michael Weinberg, Vice President at Public Knowledge, where he oversees PK Thinks, PK's place to explore long-term trends and anticipate policy challenges. And to my left, Victor Perlman, General Counsel of the American Society of Media Photographers, as well as ASMP's Managing Director. I'd like to start by asking the panelists a general question about, we all know the expression, be careful what you wish for. I'd like to start by asking your respective thoughts, either personally or on behalf of your organizations, on whether comprehensive revision is what you wish for. Alan, you want
to? Well, let me say that, speaking on behalf of the members of the Association of American Publishers, they are like other industries in Washington that are considered major stakeholders in this enterprise. They're tactically playing the position right now that they're holding their fire and judgment on the question of whether they actually want to see any legislative change at all. And most of what we've been talking about now, given the dysfunctionality of Congress on issues of national and global importance, and given all of the complexity of copyright issues and the very many stakeholders involved and the different interests that compete with each other, they're all now focused on the question of what can be accomplished without legislation. What can we do within the current framework of the Act through things like voluntary best practices that would be reached on a consensus basis through multi-stakeholder dialogues? What can we do with respect to private agreements between, say, for example, copyright owners and service providers on the Internet? They're looking at ways in which the legislative gridlock that has just about consumed every other important aspiration of the federal government recently can be avoided in this area. And what that means is that everyone is going to be in the same position, at least for a while, of kind of holding their judgment ultimately about whether or not they think legislation, let alone comprehensive legislation, is a desirable goal.
Michael?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I certainly share Alan's concern about the capacity of Washington to pass comprehensive legislation. But I think ultimately that is the way that this has to go. Because if I think of all the different places where we are having problems with copyright, and Public Knowledge is a public interest organization, so we represent sort of those end users, people who are just trying to often live their lives and don't particularly care about copyright but get drawn into copyright more often than not. I think there are a lot of ways the system is not working. And the only way to fix them is through a comprehensive rethinking of the structure of copyright law. And I think that I'm skeptical of the ability of multi-stakeholder processes or private agreements to replace that, because very often what you see with those is an agreement that is between some large players on the, and it, I don't like this dichotomy, but this is the dichotomy we use, right? Some large players in the of rights holders and some large players on whoever represents, you know, quote unquote, the other side. Very often now we're talking about tech companies. But those, the end users, the small players on both sides and the general public aren't very well represented in those. We do our best, but that's not a system that necessarily takes the public into account. And fortunately, we have an alternative. It's our governance system. and so I think that to make sure that we examine and thinking about copyright reform holistically, it is something that really does require Congress and the administration and our actual government agencies, not just people brought together under the auspices to kind of hash something out on their own.
Before I open my big mouth and get myself in trouble, let me take advantage of a disclaimer and say that what I'm going to say is my thoughts. They don't necessarily represent the views of photographers or American Society of Media Photographers or the board. I'm also very happy to see that in the spirit of cooperation, Alan has decided to dress like a photographer, and I decided to dress like a publisher. For you to understand our position regarding legislation, you need to understand how our members are affected by the current legislative system. Working photographers face some unique challenges under our current and under any future copyright system. They are generally conceded to be uniquely disenfranchised from the benefits of the copyright system. And that situation exists for a number of reasons. First, working pro photographers have extraordinarily limited resources. We are talking about small, either sole proprietors or mom-and-pop operations with no or very few employees, and if there are employees, chances are they're a family member. They're operating as freelance independent contractors, which means that they have no employee benefits like paid vacations, sick days, employer-funded retirement plans. As a result, every hour that they spend doing anything other than finding and servicing clients is an hour of unpaid overhead. Except for a few big-name individuals, most professional photographers make extremely modest livings, and you can forget all of your images of pro photographers from Antonioni's blow-up. They also are faced with a huge output of copyrighted material. Pro photographers will, in the course of a day, produce hundreds, maybe even thousands of images, each of which is entitled to copyright protection. Because of that, the burdens of using the copyright registration system are enormous. Even if you can reduce the dollar cost to the point where it becomes affordable by using things like bulk registration or registration of group images, the time investment required is huge. And it, you know, go back to the fact that if they're not working to sell and to get paid, then they're not getting paid. The time cost of registration is huge. The current registration system is also comprehensible really only to lawyers. And if you are not a lawyer, you're going to have a real problem dealing with basic issues like when is something published or not. And that's a threshold that really kind of acts as a barrier to keeping photographers out of the system. In addition, in the good old days of print media, infringement was a relatively infrequent occurrence on any kind of a significant scale, because in order to be of any commercial value, there had to be an extremely high quality level of reproduction, and there was no way to do that on in a print medium. Everything you were producing was going to be, as an infringement, was going to be second generation at best. Today, Alan Bear was saying his four-year-old kid can infringe like crazy with just the push of a click on a mouse. And worse, when this is your medium of display now, the quality that's required is almost non-existent. Also, tracking web infringement, on the good hand, is getting easier via PicScout. But the problem is that, number one, our database of registrations at the Copyright Office is not searchable via image recognition technology. Most infringements are of comparatively small dollar values. We have the ABA information that the average cost of litigating a copyright claim through to verdict of $1 million or less was $500,000 for counsel fees. These days, as all of you know, copyright lawyers are less and less willing to take cases on contingent fee basis. You have your own economics to deal with. And I'm not criticizing that. I understand it completely. But the result is that most photographers simply cannot afford to access the copyright justice system. DMCA takedown notices are ineffective because of the whack-a-mole effect. You send a notice, it disappears, and somebody else pops it right back up on the same website or a different one. There are potential solutions. We've been working for a long time with the Copyright Office to try to develop an app, an API, that would allow registration immediately and automatically through the photographer's workflow system as he digitally processes an image. There's legislation that's been studied and discussed to allow some kind of alternative dispute resolution for smaller copyright claims. The House just held hearings on possible revisions to the DMCA takedown system. We at ASMP and a number of organizations have been working with the Copyright Office and others to try to build an extended collective licensing system. To be of maximum benefit, it would have to have legislation that went along with it. Also, something that I hadn't really mentioned as a problem, but is a significant one, is, as most of you, I think, probably have seen, the courts have taken a ever-expanding and far-ranging view of fair use. Every slight change is now magically transformative, and that's all that's needed. And I think that it would be good for Congress to start to rein the courts back in and take fair use back to where it was originally intended to go. Like everybody else in this room, having seen how Congress has been able to not get along, I'm waiting and seeing to see whether we can hopefully improve things going forward.
Okay, well, so you've listed a number of different problems that I think that we fit in well with many of the things that the Register has identified that may require congressional review for these issues. But as I guess going back to the question about, as Alan mentioned, that some of these issues, there's a lot of ways to achieve progress on this. And some of these issues may be even some of the things that you were talking about, Vic, that are working with the Copyright Office or working with private entities for various kinds of agreements may be ways to move that forward. But at the same time, I think as Michael pointed out, in terms of thinking about comprehensive reform, if we're not going to do it now, if not now, when? At some point, we know there are a number of things that are straining the system as a whole. Many of the conceptual notions that are contained in the Copyright Act really don't fit well. You mentioned one, the question of publication, which was something that was fairly recognizable, although even in the shift from the 1909 Act to the 1976 Act, we moved away from putting as much importance on that because of some of the difficulties of doing that. So of interpreting that term. So if we're not going to do comprehensive reform now, or if that comprehensive reform is not achievable, do we think that there ever is that opportunity? Are we moving towards a time when we're just going to have to move away from looking at legislation in a comprehensive way as being the driving force for defining copyright law?
Well, I think that there's a difference between focusing, as Maria attempted to do, on what works and what no longer works, and what most of the stakeholder interests focus on, which is what we like and what we don't like. And obviously, when it comes to Congress, you may find people who will be willing to be champions for you with respect to what you like and don't like, but given the tremendous agenda that they're always dealing with and all of the forces that tend to roil them these days, the only real hope is that they could focus on big-ticket items that there is some degree of consensus no longer work. And more importantly, where there is at least the possibility of a consensus on what would be the fix, what would be the solution. It's sort of interesting that this used to be an area that was considered a relatively arcane, esoteric area of law. It was a bipartisan, or I should rather characterize it as a nonpartisan issue in Congress. The balance was great. Democrats typically were supporters of the arts. Republicans like property. Copyright just sort of brought them together. But the truth of the matter is today we're seeing a lot of fragmentation even within the political parties. There is a notion now about the Internet. It's always been there from the beginning. Perhaps many people would have thought that as the culture around the Internet and the politics matured, maybe this would have gone away. But the information wants to be free society still exists to a large extent. And that has touched a chord with the populism that is represented, for example, by the Tea Party elements of the Republican Party. So there's no longer a clear political landscape that sort of says, look, we can address these issues in the public interest, find what works best for all of these folks, because politically it doesn't really matter to the parties. Like everything else these days, it does matter to the parties. And the other thing I would say is that when Maria announced her I thought, very catchy title of the next great Copyright Act, actually Maria was trying to catch up a little bit. Most people would probably think that she was way out ahead of everyone else in announcing that theme. But the fact of the matter is that the locus of policymaking with respect to copyright had already shifted to a great degree in the Obama administration to the Patent and Trademark Office and the Department of Commerce. Because remember, the Copyright Office is not part of the executive branch of government. It sits in the legislative branch. And if you're the incumbent president and you bring all of these wonderful people from the tech community into your administration, they're going to want to see that they get to exercise policymaking over key issues of the kind that affect innovation and businesses involving the latest technology, particularly the Internet. So the fact is that the Patent and Trademark Office and the Department of Commerce, together with the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, had begun in the summer of 2010 to already put the idea in front of people that they wanted to hear what was working in the Copyright Act and what people thought wasn't working and should be the focus of efforts of amelioration. So I think that to some extent Maria's bold initiative was one not only, I think, to keep her and her office an active player in the game, but also to make sure that she was part of the direction of what was going to be considered to be the pieces, the movable parts of the game. And now what you have is actually, I know you've often heard people talk about Washington as a kind of a three-ring circus. Well, with respect to the issue of copyright review and potential reform, we literally have one. So you have the House Judiciary Committee holding its comprehensive set of hearings to review the Copyright Act, which we expect certainly will continue through the rest of this year and are likely to continue into next year before anyone seriously considers legislation to address some of the issues that are going to be reviewed and discussed. You also have the Patent and Trademark Office, along with the NTIA and the Commerce Department, engaged in their own process. They issued a green paper in July of last year that put forward their analysis of what the key issues are, and now they're beginning to hold a series of public roundtables, public meetings, multi-stakeholder dialogues to address the issues that they think are most susceptible to fixes without necessarily engaging the legislative process, and also that reflect their views of what the priorities should be among those parts of copyright that are viewed as needing of some sort of improvement. And then, of course, the third leg is, as traditionally it always has been, the Copyright Office itself. Maria has not been shy about issuing notices, soliciting public comment in the Federal Register. She has orchestrated, along with her very able staff, including Rob, a series of public roundtable meetings, the most recent of which were on orphan works and mass digitization. But later this week, I guess Friday, we're going to be continuing looking at efforts to improve the business recordation services and systems in the Copyright Office. So with all of that activity going on, the notion that these different disparate parts of the government are coordinating what they're doing is a very hopeful one, but likely one that I think we're going to be somewhat disappointed in. And that doesn't even begin to address the role of the federal courts.
Michael, do you want to ask?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I think a lot of that is true. But if your original question was sort of, if not now, when? And I have to say that if I was a large rights holder, I would be, or even a small rights holder, I would be pushing for copyright reform sooner rather than later. Because I think you're right, that copyright was traditionally a little bit of, I don't know, a backwater. So I was not a, you know, it was a technical area of law that had not captured the public's imagination. And for better or worse, over the past 15, 20 years, it has expanded out much beyond its traditional bounds. And, you know, that may be a good thing or maybe a bad thing, but certainly a true thing where more people are running into copyright issues in their day-to-day lives. And for many of them, what they discover when they run into those issues is not a system they think is great and fair and should be preserved. And so the medium and long-term interest of everyone who all rights holders and people who make a living off their copyright, to make sure that the system feels and operates in a way that feels fair from a public everyone standpoint, sometimes is in conflict with the shorter term interest of any individual rights holder who is looking for a clever legal way to exercise their rights or expand their rights or potentially something like that. And so I think copyright as a policy area has something of a long-term legitimacy problem where the public who is not engaged in copyright professionally on a day-to-day basis is increasingly skeptical of it. And there doesn't appear to be anything on the horizon to change that trajectory. So if I was a large rights holder, I would be pushing to lock in what I have now and not hoping that in 10 years the public will be more sympathetic to copyright and the aims of copyright. Because, and this isn't a value judgment, I think you can cut either way, but I think the reality from where I'm sitting is more and more people are aware of copyright, and those people who grow more aware of copyright grow more skeptical of copyright. And so the longer you wait to do a comprehensive reform, the more you're dealing with a public that is highly skeptical of increasing the scope or just of doing the kinds of things that if I was a rights holder, I would want in copyright reform.
So the point about the legitimacy of copyright and the complexity of copyright, which is something that is not accessible to the average member of the public, is a strong reason for maybe recalibrating or rethinking this system. But as Alan mentioned, whether Congress is up to that task in a comprehensive way and
considering that the time that went into comprehensive reform for the last Copyright Act, and the fact that the Copyright Office, and you Alan mentioned the now the complexity of the landscape for policy in this realm, but at least with respect to the 1976 Act, the Copyright Office played a significant role in the development, and Barbara Ringer and many others in the office, of actually drafting a lot of the proposed legislation and then negotiating work on that. So is that a possibility anymore to have that kind of, now that we have a landscape that is more fragmented, or there are more players and more government entities involved in that process, is there a way to consolidate this effort in any one entity to move forward some kind of comprehensive proposal?
You know, in part, I think that that depends upon how people perceive these different institutions and their relationship to the different stakeholder interests involved. You know, the Copyright Office has always pointed out, and it's always been true, that the major changes in copyright law over time have to some extent been driven by technological developments. But I think with respect to what we're dealing with now, with respect to the Internet, what is different from the prior circumstances of technological change is that the kind of technology that forced review of copyright law in the past hadn't brought with it an entire new range of businesses and interests that now have tremendous investments and very important stakes in the outcome of any review and revision of copyright law. I mean, you know, you look at the fact that the major players in the debate about copyright policy now, I'm happy to say that the publishing community is still there, but I don't believe for a minute that we occupy the space that we did in 1976 or prior to that. We've had to make room for Google and Apple and Amazon and Microsoft and folks of that nature. And they bring to the table tremendous political power, tremendous resources, and their interests are in many ways diametrically opposed to those of content producers like publishers, although that's a perception issue. We clearly have a symbiotic relationship. The wonderful devices, digital devices that are made, the internet services that are provided, the websites that are established, all the capabilities of services on the internet would be pretty meaningless to most people if at the end of the day they didn't serve to provide people with access to all of this content that they're looking for. And this is where I would dispute with Michael the idea about the public's view of copyright. I think that the public's view of copyright is one that largely is ascribed to those who sort of set themselves up as proxies for representing the public as public interest. And I don't say that in a deprecating way. I say that as somebody who spent the Ronald Reagan years as legislative counsel for the ACLU, where to some extent that's what we thought we were doing. But the fact of the matter is, the public generally is so overwhelmed with the benefits that have been provided by the internet working together with the people who produce copyrighted works to make those works available to them through distribution that could never have occurred before, through the quality of the copies of the materials that they're using, the ease with which they acquire them. I mean, you know, we're now dealing with a situation where the public is probably content overloaded to some extent. So when we're looking at the issues in terms of what really are the political key spots that are likely to be addressed, given what we know about the way the government is focusing on this issue, it's really going to have to be those issues that seem to be so powerfully impacting the American culture generally that there's just no way of avoiding them. I'll give you an example. One of the biggest issues, and it's one that no matter what other issues you talk about in copyright, it almost seems that the path leads back to this one, is the question of whether or not in today's marketplaces we actually acquire anything that we own. or whether we acquire it under a license arrangement where we obtain the right and permission to use it, to possess it, to possibly share it, to do a variety of things with it, but under the conditions of a contractual agreement. Now, there are some people who think that the movement that has occurred over the last decade in the direction of more and more things being transacted in that fashion, rather than as sales that convey ownership of something to someone, they think that's a bad thing. And yet, if you look at society, it seems that in so many ways, society has simply embraced this as a more efficient model. I don't know, maybe we become lazy. We don't want to take care of possessions anymore. But people don't think it's so important now to own a car. You can rent a car. People don't think it's so important. Home ownership, which has always been characterized as the American dream, no longer appeals to many people of the young generation today because they see it as a big headache. They see it as a financial obstacle that they may not be able to actually swallow. And frankly, in terms of their ability to find the kind of digs that they will enjoy, that they'll feel comfortable with, they don't mind renting, and there's nothing that is terribly repressive to them about renting rather than owning a home. So I think that we're going to be looking at these issues. They're going to be more than just the technical aspects of these issues or the legal questions raised by these issues. The ones that are going to be viewed as things that should be teed up and have to be subject to a process where there's some resolution to improve what people perceive as problems are those kinds of issues that are just, they're now becoming bedrock part of American culture. And to the extent that they don't work or are perceived not to work for a large part of the American population, that's the reason why the politicians in Washington are going to decide that maybe we do need to do something concrete in legislative terms about addressing them.
I think there are two wild cards out there. One is Congress. Right now we're in a situation where it is totally polarized and kind of barely functioning. Maybe I'm being the eternal optimist, but I don't know that that's going to necessarily continue for the long-term future. And, you know, remember, the 76 Act took 25 years or so to get through. And tangentially, I'll mention that Barbara Ringer said that when it was passed, it was a good 1950 Copyright Act. But that aside, the other joker, the wild card, the unknown is, and it's a case where the rabbit goes into the hat, is when we talk about the public, whom we are identifying as speaking for the public is crucial. Because if we are looking at simply individuals calling and emailing their representatives, then they are totally at the mercy of misinformation, as what happened with SOPA and PIPA. Not necessarily that they were great legislation, but the reaction to it was something that was absolutely orchestrated by the entities that Alan was talking about. If we're talking about public knowledge, if we're talking about other organizations, we have to be careful and make sure that we are really talking about entities that truly have a balanced representation of what the public interest is, and not just the public, but the public interest.
Okay, I'd like to think about a couple things. Assuming that comprehensive revision is something that is not within our immediate reach, and also considering the fact that, as was pointed out, that Congress will likely be willing to address issues for which there is a certain amount of consensus and where everyone sort of agrees that something needs to be done. I'd like to get some idea of what each of you see as the critical areas that are most in need of immediate attention. And to what extent are those issues that are best resolved by Congress in terms of revision, or, for instance, as Alan was mentioning about some of the technological change, like one of the pressures that we're experiencing now is that we've been in such a period of rapid technological change and market changes to
to, for instance, this move from distribution of physical copies to now accessing copies and having transmission of copies and the first sale issues. To what extent would it be better to have allow the market to settle, if it's ever going to settle? I mean, that's something we may have to come to terms with, is we may be in this constant change for the long haul, and the Congress has always been sort of in the situation of trying to catch up to the technological developments. It's just that now they're happening so much more rapidly. So what are some of the main issues? And also thinking about the fact that in terms of consensus and having gone to, I think there were, do you remember how many hearings, at least six congressional hearings on revision so far. At one of them, where the issue was fair use, we had a great deal of consensus for the most part, which is surprising on the issue of fair use, but the consensus seemed to be Congress, don't touch this. Don't mess with it. That although people have different reasons for whether they like it or dislike it, they would rather take their chances having this play out in other forms, in the courts. Let me start with Michael. What do you think are some of the main issues, and is Congress the best place to deal with them?
Sure. And then again, I think that Congress may not be my ideal place, but for a lot of them, it's sort of the best of a bunch of bad options. But there are a lot of areas that we think are in need of focus. One is the current notice and takedown process. I think as a concept, it works reasonably well, but when you get to the details, and you don't have to get very far into the details, you see a lot of problems. And honestly, you see problems on both sides. You see challenges with rights holders trying to deal with the fact that there are, you know, people, they're seeing their works pop up all over the place, and it's very hard for them to access it. On the flip side, you see problems where other rights holders are maybe filing notices that are not legitimate and they're not as concerned about a blowback. We also see a lot of problems where, and this is again, this is actually an example of where we have problems where you have a kind of industry consensus model. The people who are, those end users who are receiving those takedown notices, it's very hard for them to confidently submit a counter notice for all sorts of sort of structural and legal reasons. And so as a result, you get sort of an under check on that on those attempts to take things down. Again, doesn't mean the system is falling apart, but is a very diffuse but real problem that we see from users all over the country. I also think that when you think about things that need legislative fixing, a copyright term would be a place that I'd look. I think Robbie described that as one of the more out there examples. I've always wondered what the marginal value at the moment of creation of that last 20 years of copyright protection is. You know, when you were acquiring a property or something, how much value do you give to that life plus 50 to life plus 70 years? How much protection is that? And then also, there are a lot of problems. I mean, I'm going big here. there are a lot of problems with the fact that there are no formalities anymore. There are problems that were raised with the registration process, and those are problems, but those feel a lot like technical problems. They aren't conceptual problems with the idea of a registry could never support this. It's our registry cannot support this right now. And all sorts of things flow from the fact that copyright attaches to all sorts of works that really aren't part of the economic or artistic flow that is originally thought of copyright. And so that's why we've seen copyright start to spill out of its traditional bounds. I think in 1976, if you had been asked to describe copyright industries, it would have been pretty easy. You know, you would have sort of walked down with publishers and record labels and movie studios. And now copyright law is sort of everything law. And I don't think that that's necessarily healthy for copyright law. It certainly is an impediment to reform because, as you said, all of a sudden you have everyone and their mother at the table because they all are worried about what's happening. But I don't know that it's healthy for the long-term structure of copyright law because it just has to take too many things into account. There are too many burdens on it as an area of law, and it just becomes, it's not healthy over the long term.
See, you know, again, I would say that's something. I by the way, I agree with you about the notice and takedown issue and the relation of the safe harbors. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which features those provisions, that was Congress's first swing at trying to update the copyright law for the digital environment, and particularly for the internet. And it's now 15 years old. It shows a little wear and tear, and so it can use a little bit of updating. And that's one of those areas where at least the first attempt is going to be to see how far the stakeholders can get in reaching agreements on ways to improve it without involving the legislative process. But I think Rob mentioned two words that are really important here. When you talk about the market and the economy, you know, if you were to ask the American public, if there was some way of doing a kind of a plebiscite on this, you know, where do they think the problems with copyright law fit in with their perception of why the markets and the economy have run into so much trouble in recent years? I mean, you'd probably get 500 things mentioned before anybody ever got to copyright law because they just don't see it that way. It's not that kind of a palpable impact. So I think that, again, the question would be if you're looking at other areas where you might try to do some targeted things that are in the nature of what Maria's real call for was updating, bringing things up to the realities of the modern market and modern institutions. This may surprise some people in the audience, but I would say that things that would be worth doing is looking at questions about things like how libraries operate, how educational institutions operate today, and whether or not the way copyright law had worked in conjunction with the nature of those institutions, the activities that they engage in, still makes sense in the digital environment and the age of the internet. The problem with that is that much of that involves either leaving change to the sort of judgment of individual courts, starting with a single federal judge, and then if you're lucky, maybe the issue finds its way to a three-judge panel and you have at least one appellate court that now has cast a larger sphere of influence over the issue with respect to what it thinks about that issue. But the fact of the matter is, when courts get things wrong, there's almost no other way to fix it except through legislation. And that's why there are a number of areas in which copyright law, I think, has been misinterpreted and misapplied through bad judicial construction. And those areas may very well require legislation to remedy them, and that's why they're going to be difficult to address. But there are other areas in which the tension that exists, for example, between publishers and nonprofit educational institutions that not only, you know, don't see a problem with charging $40,000, $50,000 tuition, but they've now added on service fees for almost everything that a student typically goes through or becomes involved with on a college campus these days, and yet they feel that it is appropriate for them not to have to expend any money on curriculum materials, that fair use should be able to essentially provide the students with the actual materials that play the core part in their learning experience. That's something that obviously is an issue has been already fought out to some extent in the courts. We're waiting, as many of you know, we appealed what we consider to be a very unfortunate decision by a federal district judge in the Northern District of Atlanta, and we're waiting for the 11th Circuit to rule on our appeal of the Georgia State University case. And again, I think many of these issues would be ones that would be hard fought in Congress in order to be able to try to reach a new balance of interests among these communities for the digital era through legislation. But I don't think that we've even begun to see whether or not publishers and other content producers sitting down with these institutions can improve the situation for both stakeholder communities without resort to Congress. Maybe it's an impossible objective to achieve, but the fact of the matter, it hasn't been tried yet. And that has to do with the perceptions of these communities on where their best interests lie. The library community that just a few years ago was very interested in legislative amendment of Section 108, which provides certain privileges for libraries and archives, now apparently is no longer interested in the recommendations of the study in which a large part of the library community participated, because they have achieved a few victories under the fair use banner in court, and now they think that's the way to go. I spent a tremendous amount of time a few years ago working on Orphan Works legislation with representatives of the library and educational community. We even managed to get a bill passed the United States Senate. No small feat. But frankly, what I hear these days is that neither the library community nor the educational community has any interest in doing Orphan Works legislation, because once again, they are content to roll the dice in court with the fair use doctrine. So with those kinds of differences in the way the thinking about what the nature of the problems are and what process or what path is there towards some sort of fix that might accommodate the interests of everyone, it's very difficult to even get started on working through some of these problems.
Yeah, I would love to be able to do an end run around Congress. So when Rob posed the question, I started to write down, okay, what would I try to fix? And everything I wrote down needed congressional action, even to the point of trying to get the registration system streamlined, because that takes Congress to fund it. You know, we haven't been the land of the free in a long time.
Well, so I think the points, and certainly the appropriations point, is well taken, and one everyone should keep in mind.
You don't object?
That we do see some of these changes based on the direction that certain things are going. For instance, fair use, the direction that has completely derailed. I, like you, was the only person still at the office who worked on the original Orphan Works report, and we were back talking about the same issues, sure, really again. And many of the things that Alan raised in terms of the issues that are being raised in the PTO and NTIA forums are issues that have been being discussed for some time. These are, we have these panels and people get up and talk about them.
I thought it was interesting that one of the five issues highlighted by PTO in the green paper and about which they had panels in the public roundtables they've had was the question of remixes and mashups. Now, I do understand that that's a very important concept in art for people, many people in this country, but I don't know whether I would characterize that as being in the first five issues that I would have put on the table as things that we needed to take a good hard look at.
And it's one of the things that currently we're seeing fair use take care of, or at least where
to the extent it can.
It can. But replacing some of those issues. So what would be, and I want to open this up to audience questions after this, but giving what the people had mentioned the DMCA, and in one article a while ago, after having worked for many years on the Section 1201 rulemaking within the office, there was one scholarly article that looked at that process as a positive development in copyright law, and that was music to my ears just after all. But the basic premise being that this was a situation where Congress enacted a law, but then we can quibble about whether it gave appropriate authority in that context, but where it had an administrative add-on to the legislation where things could be adjusted over time. And this was something that Maria raised also, and I wonder to what extent do you think some of these issues were Congress to move more in the direction of allowing an agency like the Copyright Office to have more authority to adjust or to define or redefine as time went on through rulemaking processes some of these issues, whether it be some particular changes in Section 108, or whether it be assisting with the definition of publication as some of those issues develop.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely mandatory, because that's the only way to avoid passing a comprehensive copyright act that's anywhere from 20 to 50 years out of date on the day that it's passed.
Well, remember, appropriations.
No, I'm a great advocate of the idea of the Copyright Office, which, after all, is the and has always been the repository of expertise in this area, to utilize rulemaking authority in order to be able to bring groups together and address some of these issues in a way that is still cumbersome to some extent, but not so much as the legislative process. But look at the difficulty you have. You know, the Copyright Office has always been something of a stepchild in government. It sits in the legislative branch as part of the Library of Congress. It gets its money through the legislative appropriations, and yet while it answers to the Register, it also answers to the Librarian of Congress, who is a Senate-confirmed appointee of the President, which would be typical of an executive branch agency. But the problem, of course, is that there were many people who would immediately argue that because of the situation of the Copyright Office not being part of the executive branch, being part of the legislative branch, it doesn't in fact have the rulemaking authority, the regulatory authority of agencies in the executive branch. And if you look at the history of the regulatory authority of the Copyright Office, what you'll see is that as part of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act in 1998, and most people probably don't even notice this position, these provisions, they're in the back of the law, Congress actually thought it was necessary to lay out what are the administrative authorities of the Copyright Office, what do they do? And in a way that seemed to be somewhat stingy with regard to that, what Congress basically said was, you're going to have administrative authority. We're not giving you full-blown rulemaking authority. You'll have authority to administer certain processes that Congress has authorized by law, and we've placed you in a position of stewardship over, but we're really not going to allow you to set or in any way specifically change the rules. Those are going to come from Congress. And the reason, as Vic mentioned, we have this overblown copyright law is because in the absence of a consensus to let the Copyright Office, notwithstanding its location in government, not be thwarted from exercising its expertise through rulemaking to address these issues, the problem we have is that Congress always feels that when it deals with copyright issues in legislation, it has to legislate in much greater detail than ordinarily it would with other forms of law, where it is satisfied to state general principles of policy and then delegate the implementation of those to the expert agencies of the executive branch. So I would hope that maybe if Congress becomes a little frustrated after going through this hearing process with the next step about whether it's going to actually be able to do anything legislatively, maybe the idea will occur to it that if it turned to the Copyright Office with its expertise, gave them a little bit more free rein with respect to rulemaking authority, that some of these issues not only could be taken off Congress's hands, but actually resolved in a way that probably would be better than what Congress would achieve.
I have to disagree with that a little bit. I mean, I think that, Rob, I know you guys worked very hard on the 1201 proceedings, but...
Used to.
We haven't used... Well...
Personally.
Collectively. But I don't know that... I can speak for myself, I can speak for public knowledge, that we haven't been particularly excited about how those proceedings have operated, both from sort of a structural standpoint, and then, I mean, I don't want to say we judge it only on results, but we haven't been excited about the results either. It's been a process that I think a lot of people have been critical of. Structurally, it's been hard to figure out where to address complaints, process-oriented complaints, and how the structure is created. And so right now, based on the track record, only on the track record of the 1201 process, the idea of expanding and replicating that process to involve more areas of copyright law is something that makes me fairly anxious. Now, it may be that in doing so, the authority and the structure of the Copyright Office would be changed to address some of those concerns, but the version of the Copyright Office that has been operating the 1201 process, it's not a process that I often point to as a fantastic process that I'd love to see in more places.
But again, how would you feel if Congress said, all right, we recognize that, so we're going to give you the rulemaking authority more like that of an executive branch agency. We'll give you, you know, Chevron deference to your expertise. We will have you go through, public comment notice rulemaking. You'll be subject to the Administrative Procedures Act the same way any other executive.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be a significant change. The details would matter, but it would require a significant change before we'd say this is something that...
Okay, we got a proposal. There we go.
I want to... we don't have much time left. I want to open up to any questions or... Yeah.
Can you guys... sort of explain to us where exactly procedurally this process is. Has anybody proposed any legislation?
Well, if you look at the report, if you look at Maria's paper, one of the things that she points out is that many of these issues are at different stages of examination and development. Some of them, for example, I mean, to give you a fairly technical one, the status of pre-1972 sound recordings is something that has been very well teed up through hearings over the years. There have been legislative proposals introduced, and it's sort of criminal that they haven't been able to kind of take that one off the table and resolve it already. The same thing is true some of the issues. Most of these issues have to do, interestingly, with music and music licensing. Where there have been studies,
a highly functional area. Of
yeah, well, but there have been studies done. There have been legislative proposals. The question is whether they could be acted upon. Other issues that she would have indicated, to the extent they've been the subject of studies done by the Copyright Office or studies done by PTO, she makes some distinction between issues where the study was one that was self-initiated as opposed to one that was directed by Congress, which I could understand for political reasons. But again, there are different tiers of issues. So if you looked at her written lecture, the paper, The Next Great Copyright Act, she actually lays out what she thinks are the ones that are in the first tier because there's been enough preparatory work done on them so that now it's time to start making some decisions, negotiating resolutions. There are others that are still very much in the study, level of activity. At the moment, at least in the House and the Senate, the process of comprehensive review through ongoing hearings is only occurring in the House. The Senate is still, they haven't even begun on this, and they're still behind the House in dealing with patent reform. So that's their intellectual property focus at the moment. But the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Bob Goodlatte, made it clear when he responded to Maria's call by initiating this series of hearings that he wasn't going to be interested in looking at legislative proposals at this time. He wanted to go through the hearing process so he could hear from different stakeholders what they would describe as the problems, how they would prioritize them, whether or not they thought they had ideas about resolving them. But so far, people aren't introducing legislative proposals because he already has told them it's not time yet.
The fast-track version of this is a 2 to 3 year process, I think. Although, Rob, I'd love to hear what you guys are hearing. It's worth a shot.
But you guys are opposed to fast-track legislation, so that's another matter.
No, only when it involves IP.
2 to 3 years is optimistic.
I think that's the wildly fast track. Okay.
Other questions?
Yes. The piece here by Maria supports the registration requirement. This is for Alan. Photographers I represent, if they know about the registration requirement, which would go away, what are the publishers then?
Publishers really haven't had much difficulty with the registration requirement. I mean, they've had issues. Their issues have been fairly technical ones arising with compilations, collections of work, more so than individual works. But it hasn't been, I mean, the photographers needed a group registration process. They needed something specific to deal with the sheer volume of works output of an individual. That situation just doesn't exist in the publishing area. Our view of this is that as we regularly point out, one of the most important things that copyright has done for the United States, it is the jewel of the U.S. export trade balance. I mean, the fact of the matter is it's not debated. Studies have been done that show that copyrighted goods account for a more favorable export position on the part of the United States than the airplane industry, automobile parts, and even pharmaceutical industries. So the fact of the matter is we have been pursuing a kind of a harmonization throughout the world of copyright laws, or at least principles and policies, because it's good for the United States economy, it's good for the creators of works in the United States, it's also good for U.S. consumers. So this question about whether or not we need to play with the formalities at all is kind of a touchy one. I understand people who attribute the existence of orphan works to the fact that copyright protection now comes for an individual without them having to do anything other than create and fix the work. But if we went backwards and started to reinstitute certain types of formalities in order for a copyright owner or a creator of a work to obtain copyright protection, I think that the implications, the ramifications for that in global markets and with other trading partners who are currently reforming their own copyright laws would be very significant and would likely set us back rather than move us forward in any significant way.
Yeah, and the political reality, Alan, is that as much as I would love to push a button and have a registration requirement go away, we are probably the only two people in the whole world who feel that way. Everybody else is fighting it, and it is really unobtainium.
Yes. Yeah, so the panelists have covered a lot of ground and mentioned a lot of the issues that they'd like to potentially see addressed. But for fun, I'm just curious that if they could each snap their fingers and change one thing, what would it be?
If I had to do it right now, I'd reverse the Kurtzang decision. It's a stupid decision.
You hate free trade?
First of all, we don't have enough time for this. But first of all, the idea of the fact that people are able to price to the market in order to establish foreign markets in American goods has been advocated by successive administrations going back two centuries. Okay, and it didn't matter which party was in the White House. It's been good for the U.S. economy. In fact, at times when the U.S. domestic economy has been showing troubles for other reasons, that was one of the things that always helped keep the U.S. economy afloat, because we do very well. The rest of the world, for whatever reason, is enamored with all kinds of U.S. copyrighted content, movies, music, software, books, everything of that nature. Somehow or another, Justice Breyer missed the memo about the visibility of rights and the fact that the idea that you were capable not only of being able to have exclusive rights, non-exclusive rights, sublicensing of rights in your works, all part and parcel of having a very robust trade in U.S. copyrighted works in international marketplaces, somehow eluded him in writing that decision, and I would love to see the court reverse it. It does no good for the creators of U.S. copyrighted works, and despite the initial blush of joy on the part of those who claim to represent consumers, it's not eventually going to do anything for consumers either, because once those copyright owners, like the publishers I represent, can no longer price to the market, they're no longer going to be able to have those markets, and the consumers are no longer going to be able to have the benefit of people buying up those works abroad and bringing them back to the United States to sell at lower prices than the domestic-based works. So that would be the one I would snap my fingers for.
Michael, your one wish?
I would probably reimpose a registration requirement, and the reason for that, very briefly, is that I think that would go a long way towards bringing the focus of copyright law back to people who care about their copyrights for some sort of economic reason. I mean, look, copyright is a very powerful economic right, and the idea that you have to do something in order to get that benefit, it strikes me as completely reasonable. And would exclude, and not in a pejorative way, would exclude a huge number of rights holders now who have no real interest in having their rights, having those rights, have no real desire to use them, but their existence make other things, other reasonable things, problematic, because you always have to consider the fact that everyone is by the time they are in their late middle age, are rights holders of millions of random little works. And you have to take that into account whenever you're trying to design a system to deal with copyright issues. And there's really no need to, because no one's benefiting from those works.
Okay. I'd like to see a people's court for infringements of photographs involving relatively smaller amounts of money. the absolute number one on the hit parade.
All right. Well, I think we're out of time, but I want to thank all the panelists.